Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Monday, November 4, 2019 meeting of the Astoria City Council. A roll call, Deputy Chief Halverson.
Counselor Herman?
Here.
Counselor West?
Here.
Counselor Brownsmith?
Here.
Counselor Rocca?
Here.
And Mayor Jones?
Here. Reports of counselors. Counselor Rocca?
Yes, got to represent the city, got the board meeting for the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force, and they specialize in environmental planning and habitat restoration for fish and wildlife. They do a lot of projects for Bonneville, with what I think of as built money for Bonneville. But the bottom line is they're doing really good work in terms of restoring habitat. Just the season to get a flu shot, and we got lucky enough to get ours here, but I just wanted to remind everybody to go and do it. I attended the work session, as we all did, on enterprise zones, which we'll be talking about at future meetings. And I attended the quarterly small cities meeting of the League of Oregon Cities, held this time in Warrington. Much of the discussion was about homelessness and what each of us is trying to do to address it. That's my report.
Great, thank you. Counselor West?
I just want to reiterate the work session that we all attended on the enterprise zone in Fort George, and we're really, I know I'm really looking forward to working on that. Also was able to attend the Dia de los Muertos celebration that the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council put on last weekend. And the annual KMUN members meeting too, which I've been going to that for about 10 years. Saw some of my other fellow counselors there, and I think it was my favorite annual KMUN meeting yet, so that's all I have.
Thank you. Counselor Brownson?
Yeah, I really don't have much to report this week, so I'll pass it on.
Counselor?
Sure. Well, one of my favorite duties, well not duty, activities as a city counselor is participating in the meet and greet that members of the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association do for new or newly moved businesses and organizations. And we went out a week ago Friday on a beautiful fall afternoon and visited the new space of the Lower Columbia Hispanic Council, which is in what used to be the furniture section of the old Deja Vu thrift store on Duane Street near 14th. They've done a beautiful job beautifying the space. And right next door in what used to be, the Astoria Co-op several years ago, as well as Deja Vu, is a beautiful new gallery, the Vaulted Gallery. Used to be a bank, so I'm guessing that's where they get the name. And I'm pretty sure that's opening this coming Saturday for Art Walk. We visited the Brute Wine Bar, a new wine bar. I'm not sure if it's quite open yet. It's on 10th Street between Marine Drive and Commercial, right next to Posey Reed, as well as West Coast Artisans, which is on the corner of 10th and Marine, and the Secret Gallery, which is owned by Jill McFarish, who started the McFarish Gallery on 10th. So it's kind of back in a little warren of spaces behind her former gallery. So right on 10th between Marine and the river, and it's owned by her and Chris Minnick. So great to see those new businesses or newly moved businesses. And I just wanted to give another shout out to the YMCA building, which has been lovingly restored by the Weber family. They've got two new tenants, local clothing maker Shift and local bag maker Wheeler Bags, which are moving into the Y. And I just think it's a great use of that space. I'm really appreciative of all the young creative energy that is coming to our community and enriching it so much.
Thank you. So I had the privilege yesterday of attending the mobilization ceremony for the 116th Air Patrol Squadron, which is about 110 men and women from our area who are in the Air National Guard, and they're deploying to Southwest Asia for about 6 months to provide air control services for a variety of DOD and allied services, and certainly was nice to see so many people come see them off. And also attended the Parks and Rec benefit at Fort George. A good crowd there, hopefully raised some money to help out with the Parks and Rec. As guest speaker at a Rotary Club lunch last week, and told them to just talk about city stuff, and they didn't ask me too many tough questions. I think they just needed to get back to work. And enjoyed interviewing our community development director recruiter, She was brought in to talk to a variety of community members about what the community is looking for in a community development director, and we hope that this next recruiter will do an excellent job for us, and she comes very highly recommended. We had a Design Review Commission member resign due to personal reasons, and I've appointed Dulcie Taylor as a new member of the Design Review Commission. And finally, I want to congratulate the owners of the Oddfellows Building, including Councilor West, for the amazing $150,000 preservation grant received from, what's the name of the organization again?
It's the National Historic Trust, so it's out of National Geographic.
That's just fabulous. Congratulations. Consent calendar. Items on the consent calendar are considered routine and will be adopted by one motion unless a member of the council requests to have an item. Did I miss?
No changes.
Okay, no changes to agenda.
Yes.
And unless an item is requested to be considered separately, members of the community may have an item removed by contacting the city manager by 5 p.m. on the day of the meeting. Are there any items requested moved by the public?
No requests.
And I just found a very minor name correction on item 5A, so I'll ask to remove 5A for that. Any other, does anyone else want an item removed from the consent calendar? So could we have a motion for 5B and C, please?
We may be talking about the same thing, but there is in the minutes for October 7th a name.
Oh, that's another one. So okay. Mine was on September 30. So want to pull 5B off as well?
I guess so. Just a tiny change, yes.
Okay.
So I'll make a motion to accept 5C of the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Roll. I should look at my agenda and see that. So roll call, Chief Crutchfield.
Councilor Herndon?
Yes.
Councilor Brownson?
Aye.
Councilor West?
Aye.
Councilor Rocca?
Aye.
And Mayor Jones?
Aye. Item 5A is the September 30 minutes of the council. And I would just note under item 3A, paragraph 2, it refers to Mary Steenburgen, and it's Terry Steenburgen from the harbor. And with that correction, I would move that we accept, that we approve item 5B.
Second.
And
that's 5A.
5A. Right. Yes, 5A. And roll call, Mr. Harrington.
Councilor Herndon?
Aye.
Councilor Brownson?
Aye.
Councilor West?
Aye.
Councilor Rocca?
Aye.
Mr. Jones?
Aye.
So in the minutes for October 7th on page 28, Dirk Rohn is identified as Dirk Rohn.
Okay, we'll make that correction.
And with that correction, I would move that we approve that in.
Second. And roll call, Ms. Brooks.
Councilor Herndon?
Aye.
Councilor Brownson?
Aye.
Councilor West?
Aye.
Councilor Rocca?
Aye.
Mayor Jones?
Aye. All right, regular agenda items. All agenda items are open for public comment following deliberation by the City Council. I'll make an exception to that in a moment. Rather than asking for public comment after each agenda item, the mayor asks that audience members raise their hands if they want to speak to the item and they'll be recognized. In order to respect everyone's time, comments are limited to 3 minutes. And please note regarding item 6B, I have determined that there will be no public comment received on the procedural matter of determining the type of hearing on legal advice to avoid the potential of ex parte contacts. Item 6A is consideration of property sale proposals for Mill Pond.
In November of 2018, council authorized staff to contract with the real estate agency Area Properties to market the city-owned pier lots in the Mill Pond area. The pier lots are 12 platted lots donated to the city by the developer of the Mill Pond, Art Jamiro. Since the time of the donation, the city has paid homeowners association fees in excess of $64,000. The lots were originally listed for sale at $45,000 for each pier, or $90,000 total. Although the lots have been available for sale periodically since 2012, no offers have been forthcoming until May of this year. In May, Mary Wickstrom of Area Properties was contacted by Cheryl Story, a homeowner on Mill Pond Lane, on behalf of a group of independent Mill Pond homeowners, not the Mill Pond Homeowners Association. And they were interested in providing a donation to the city of $11,500 to decommission the 12 lots. On July 1st, the council surprised the offer and directed staff to develop a formal proposal to consider. On July 19th, Mary Wickstrom of Area Properties was sent a letter of intent from John Dulcich of Goldsmith Land Investments expressing interest in purchasing these lots. Mr. Dulcich was asked to provide a formal purchase and sale agreement, which he did on August 23rd, and that was for $35,000. At the September 3rd council meeting, the council scheduled a public hearing on September 30th to consider the offer in accordance with the real estate property procedures of the city code. The city council held a public hearing and continued it to tonight's meeting for additional information to be brought forward. I would note that at the September 30th meeting, there was an additional offer which was provided by the Mill Pond residents, and the offer was for $40,000. That was received by the city council that evening. I would note that if the Dulcich offer is accepted, it would be as is, and the buyer would be subject to the development code provisions included in the City of Astoria Development Code, as well as any of the Mill Pond Homeowners Association deed restrictions. If the homeowner's offer was accepted, the council could incur costs to decommission the lots as noted in the council memo. So tonight it's recommended that the city council continue to receive public comment on this request, consider each of the offers, and tentatively accept one of them pending review by staff and the city attorney. What we're looking for tonight is some direction from the city council as to how you'd wish to move forward. And based on that, we would then prepare final documents for consideration by the council. We do have Mike Morgan in the audience, who has been assisting on this, as well as Public Works Director Jeff Harrington, whose department manages all property matters.
Okay. So I was really interested today in looking at what the potential property tax revenue might be from these lots. And so I went to the county's, if you're ever interested in looking at any tax lots within the county, go to Clatsop County GIS, and they have actually a pretty nice system to look up any tax lot ownership history, et cetera. But what's not shown on the slide there is that there are actually 14 additional overwater platted tax lots. There are seven on the top of your screen, which is actually east, the east side of the pond. At the top of your screen, there are seven platted residential lots, one of which has been built on, as you can see. And then on the bottom of the screen, which is the west side of Mill Pond, there are seven additional platted residential tax lots on which four homes have been built. So it's actually a total of 14 lots plus the 12 that the city owns, 26 overwater residential tax lots. And so I was curious to try to determine what might be the potential tax revenue from these lots. And looking at the lots which have not yet been built, it seems that every one of them is taxed at $589.70 a year. And then looking at the five built overwater homes, according to the county tax lot map for 2019 property taxes, the beginning with that home at the top, their annual property taxes are $6,484. And then the next two coming around the northwest corner of the pond are $5,834, $5,955, and then $4,807 and $5,350 a year. So for those five overwater homes that are in existence, the annual property tax revenue to the county is $28,432. So, of course, if the homes are sold to Mr. Dulcich, we don't know when he'll build or what the value of the homes will be, but I would just offer that the unbuilt lots over water now are currently about, again, $590 a year, and the built homes are range between $5,300 and $6,500 a year in property taxes. So that just gives, at least for me, gives me a ballpark figure of, okay, what we're looking at, $20,000, $30,000 a year in property tax revenue, that if over the course of 10 years turns into $200,000 to $300,000 worth of property tax revenue that we would forfeit by decommissioning the lots. And that to me was a factor that I wanted to at least consider. I can pass this down to my colleagues just for you to look at. So we could either, if any councilors want to make further comment now, or we could open up for public comment and have you make comment later, or do both.
I just had a quick question.
Yeah.
So if the Mill Pond residents were to purchase these lots, would they then be, they would be responsible for the 500-something?
No, because the Mill Pond residents are not offering to purchase the lots. What they're offering to do is make a donation to the city in exchange for us decommissioning them. The city would still own them, but as they have expressed in their, through their lawyer, I believe, that the city would not have to pay the HOA fees.
Correct.
But they would not, they would also not pay property tax because they would not own them.
So they're not
offering to buy the property to keep it from being built, in which case they would incur the cost of property taxes. They're just offering to ask us to decommission.
Okay.
So to follow up on that, maybe Brett, you can address this. So are we are currently paying property taxes, the city, on those lots?
We are not paying property taxes now.
Because as a governmental entity, we don't have to.
We don't have to pay taxes.
Let me back up on that. We do pay property taxes whenever we are seeing any real estate revenue from those. So if there are situations where we may lease city land to a private entity, then we are charged property taxes because we're receiving a monetary value for them. But the county tax assessor at this point has not seen this as any sort of value, since we're not charging anything for them. So.
And then the decommissioned lots would be still sort of, there would be no property taxes involved going forward. So
that's correct
as well.
I guess that's what my question was kind of getting at. Thank you.
I had just one question. Mayor Jones, those numbers, I think I know the answer, but those property tax figures would be for all taxing districts, including the city.
So that's right. So those figures I gave you, the home at the very top left of the pond, for example, that they pay $6,484 this year, that's the county property tax. Some of it goes to the school district, some goes to the community college, and it's through the same formula that all
right.
property
okay.
taxes are divvied up to different beneficiaries.
Thank you.
Well, I'll open up if there's, I haven't seen anyone raise their hand, but if anyone would like to make a public comment, the podium, and you'll have, please state your name and address, and you'll have 3 minutes.
All right, I'm Cheryl Story at 2605 Mill Pond, and I'm the one representing the Mill Pond homeowners who've donated or committed to support the homeowners and their in decommissioning the lots. We recognize that there are individual lots around the pond, but these are platted for single homes only with very little footprint into the pond itself. The piers have a very large footprint into the pond, thus our concern. We sent information regarding our position in a memo to all city council members on September 20th, so I don't want to restate our concerns there. I mean, the city's received a memo from the HOA regarding the status of the board's position with the pier lots, so the city can move forward if they choose to support the Mill Pond homeowners. And so we just want to confirm the city's allowed to dedicate the property once the lots are removed from the land plat and the HOA dues would cease to exist. Our HOA has 70 individual lot owners, and based on further follow-up between John Ryan and myself, we have support from at least 60% of the Milcon owners who live within the HOA. This is support, not all of it financial, but it's, I guess, mental support for our position. So the remaining 50 HOA units comprise only 4 owners, as these are the apartments, co-op, and pier lots. 3 of the 4 owners are out-of-town owners who never stay on their property, while the 4th is the city of Astoria itself. So 70 individual homeowner lots, the other 4 owners have the very large lots. We asked City Council to accept Middle Pond owners' offer of $40,000 in donations to DPLAT. We recognize additional paperwork will need to be completed and HOA dues will be due by January 31st of next year. We'd like to work with the city to finalize the paperwork. One of our donors has anonymously agreed to pay the city's HOA dues for 2020 on behalf of the city of Astoria. We understand there might be additional costs to DPLAT, survey drawings, and we want to be sure the city's covered for the additional costs over $40,000. We have donors willing to step up and cover these additional costs. In short, we want to be sure the city is not out of pocket for any costs to DPLAT. We want to keep Mill Pond the jewel that the city's rightly proud of, and we thank you for your support of our offer. And I just want to note that nobody's wanted to build on those pier lots. It's possible that those pier lots might never be built, so the property taxes may never come about, and the homes that were quoted are individual homes that are much larger in size than the size of the homes that would be built on those pier lots anyway. So it's a question as to whether the taxes would even approach what's on the current homes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Story.
Hi, councilors and mayor. John Ryan, 2495 Mill Pond Lane. I just like to run through what's happened in the last couple of years with this adventure that we've taken on here. About 2 years ago, I met with Arlene Lemire, your former mayor, and we talked about how we could eliminate these fees that the city was paying to the Mill Pond Homeowners Association. And we discussed that, and then after that, I think there was a little bit of interest in the city, and I met with Mike Morgan and Jeff Harrington to find out exactly where we were headed and if this was possible, because we did not want to buy them. I felt that we had an individuals that we could gather up from the donations, so we would start on working toward the donation and everything. And our goal was to make this a city park, which is basically a city park now. It's right adjacent to the Pergola Park, and Mill Pond takes care of that whole area right now and everything, so it would be no difference. And the city owns the property, so this was possible. If this was an owner, as you're suggesting, this property will never, ever be able to be a park again. The approach that we had, it had to go through sale, and Brett laid out a lot of the stuff that I was going to talk about $11,500. When we offered that, we thought the decommissioning offer was $20,000. Well, unbeknownst to us, this offer came up, and in early September, the city received a bid for $35,000 for these lots. Keep in mind, you had these on market for $90,000, so this wasn't even a status bid. The developer offered this, and we can only guess where he came from. I don't know where he, how he heard about this or where he came from, but all of a sudden, when we came up with the day that we were going to talk about this, all of a sudden we have another developer in looking at this. We must remember, this is a a out-of-state developer, again, a high-powered developer from Seattle, buying what he thinks he can do, a steal for a deal. And I think that's what this is, a steal for a deal. You got a $30,000 offer, or 35, or whatever, for a waterfront property and taking up a view corridor, taking up a habitat, taking up a potential city park, which will cost the city nothing. This is a real loser for the city. We think that we have a good program to take care of the pond. We have a pending grant to take care of the perimeter of the pond. We won't be able to get that once this happens because this takes away half the perimeter of the pond. We now only have the north side of the pond with the private lots on the side. That wouldn't be part of the grant. This is an environmental habitat, the treasure that we have in Astoria. And I think it'll be a real shame for the city to turn down. We have 16 persons that have donated $40,000 for a city park. Try to find that in the state of Oregon to beat that. And if you turn that down, I think you're missing out on something. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Yes. Pardon me?
My name is Jadine Wingert, and I live at 2705 Mill Pond Lane. And before I begin, I wish to thank you for the time and consideration that you have given to those of us who are pushing for the Mill Pond pier lots to be turned into a wetland city park. I realize that even though the payment of the HOA fees, which originally was a major issue, can now be discontinued once those lots become a park, you may still vote in favor of development rather than parkland. If you do choose to vote for development, I have a formal request. I have become aware that there are still remains two deposits of hazardous waste at the south end of the pond. I, and I'm sure some of the other residents that are on the south side of Mill Pond Lane, would like to receive a formal report on the exact location of these toxins and also what the composition of the waste material happens to be. I myself am a two-time cancer survivor, and because of that, my advancing age and the medication that I currently take to ward off more cancer, my immunity system is not quite up to par. I know there are others on my street who also have health issues. When the pilings for the pier are pounded into place, the vibrations could possibly stir up these toxins. I am a permanent resident, and I do not own another house that I can easily move into during the duration of the pier building. I will need the information for the city has in their records from the time of the original cleanup to make a decision on what I should do once the building begins, if you so vote. Again, thank you for listening to us.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, can I chime in on that real quick?
Please do.
Just so you're aware, the Department of Environmental Quality from the state of Oregon is probably who you need to chat with. Jeff Harrington, who is our city engineer, was actually the engineer of record when he was in private service on that project. He may be able to give you some general information, but this was actually an environmental cleanup site which received a federal EPA award from the Environmental Protection Agency.
And so
if you have specific questions, I would suggest you contact the State of Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to get that detail. But Jeff Harrington may be able to get you some preliminary, just some general information.
Yeah, because I would like to be specific as to where.
Yeah, if you're wanting to dig into that, you probably want to talk to the state board.
Yeah, because I was under the impression that the city was actually running the cleanup.
No. It's actually done through the state of Oregon. Any environmental cleanups are reviewed and ultimately approved by the state of Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
So you don't have any of the records in your city?
We may have some files, but if you're wanting the cleanup files, because again, The cleanup is done to the standards of the state of Oregon, not, the city of Astoria does not establish those parameters.
Good evening, councilors. My name is John Dulcich. I have made that offer. I mentioned this in the last meeting. I was raised in Astoria. Our family's lived in Astoria for 58 years. My dad was a football coach and then a longtime athletic director. My mom, age 90, still lives in Astoria, was a long-term speech pathologist. I love the Mill Pond. It's a beautiful area. I want to live there. And I want to develop some homes there. And that's my goal. There's nothing nefarious going on. I'd like to put those lots back onto the tax rolls. Like I said before, I'd like to try and complete the vision that Mr. DeMero had on those lots. It's tough because there's a lot of height restrictions, and it could be as simple as 2 to 3 very nice homes on each of those piers. It might not be 12. And those values of those homes would probably be equal then or greater to what's currently in the Mill Pond. Not some big time Seattle developer. I love Astoria. I'd like to be a part of the Mill Pond, and my case is simple as that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public?
Hi, good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Karen Haynes and I live at 2505 Mill Pond Lane. I'd first just like to say something in regard to some of the comments that were made at the beginning in terms of property taxes. Over the years, there have been many studies, or quite a few studies, most notably by the American Planning Association, that demonstrate that single-family development does not pay its own way in property taxes. Their demand for services are in excess of what they pay for property taxes. Anyway, there are a number of studies that demonstrate that single family and low density multifamily. My husband and I have lived or have owned a home in this area for about 25 years. We've made a permanent move to Astoria about 4.5 years ago, and we recently moved to our current home across from Mill Pond less than 3 months ago. I believe, as you do, that the City Council has an obligation to make decisions that are in the best interests of all of the citizens of Astoria, especially when they're challenged by a group of property owners and development interests. You are stewards of the city's assets, tax dollars, and quality of life. In this current situation, I believe that the best interests of the city as a whole are served by protecting, preserving, and enhancing Mill Pond as a unique community asset. This can be observed, this community asset, if you just come and spend an afternoon or a morning sitting there under the pergola in the park, you will see so many residents of Astoria coming by, parking there, going for a walk on the south side, not just on the riverside. So for those who are interested in selling the lots, I say go ahead, sell them, but don't give them away. Accepting $35,000 for 12 over the water waterfront lots could be considered the deal of the century. Selling 12 waterfront lots for $35,000 would not be in the best interest of the city, would not be in the best interest of the citizens. It would only be in the best interest of the person buying, the developer. In November, you listed the property for sale for a total of $90,000. And the offered price of $35,000 is just barely a third of that. I'm guessing that you did, or the realtor did, some type of market analysis to set the price at $90,000. There's another lot on the pond that's for sale right now, and they're asking the same amount that is being offered for 12 lots. I believe that if you want to sell the properties, it is incumbent upon you to at least know the market value and sell it for as close to that value as possible. Your own code requires an appraisal when selling city property. And so far, I've not seen any evidence that one has been undertaken. Well, the purpose of the requirement for the appraisal is so that you know the value of what you are selling. And the code says the public works director shall require an appraisal. It doesn't say should require or may require. It says shall require an appraisal. It goes on to say that except in those cases where it is deemed unnecessary, such as a small lot or an appraisal has recently been completed. I've not seen any evidence that the council has authorized an exception to the appraisal. I encourage you to work with the homeowners and to make this continue, this beautiful asset in the city of Astoria. You won't need to do an appraisal, and you will no longer be paying HOA fees. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments at this time? Council discussion? Oh, sorry. Mr. Figg.
For the record, my name is Steve Figg. I live 36528 Cadenon Lane, Astoria, Oregon. I didn't intend on commenting on this, but I felt it was necessary. It's costing you something to maintain those lots right now. If you can sell it and generate potential tax revenue, as the mayor has given examples to, I think that's a relatively good investment. I've actually got a degree in parks and leisure services, and I've built parks. This is not be very creative in making a park in that area for the city, and we have challenges right now maintaining our parks. But I would suggest that you consider trying to market these products, these lots. I listen to this, and once again, it appears that there's people want to have a takings, in this case from the city, for their individual benefits of their houses, which was clearly zoned for the development of these houses. And it's an issue I'm fighting on the waterfront right now, is somebody wants to have the benefit and not pay for it. Buy the lots, don't develop them. Pay the taxes on them, if that's the best interest for those property owners. Those are all very nice houses, high quality houses, and obviously you must have some sort of economic resources to live in those houses. If you want the view, invest a little bit more. Otherwise, the best interest of the city would be, with all our rising property taxes, to consider moving forward with some revenue out of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Council discussion.
Actually, am I able to ask Ms. Story a question?
Sure.
You had mentioned that you had 60% or over 60% of the Mill Pond residents support, and I definitely don't want to challenge your data, but did you gather signatures, or is there anything that could be?
Well, what we're right now, I have a list in Excel of everybody's names and who is donating the dollar amount. And those that aren't donating, are they in favor? Because we've gone and talked to them individually and they have given our verbal support, or it's been an email.
Okay, and I'm sorry, what was the exact number of that again?
Well, we got up to 58% a couple days ago, and John, you found there's a couple more people and they said that they would donate as well. So now we are about, so that puts us at about 60% of the 70 individual homeowners.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, Ms. Story, is that there? May I ask the question as well? I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. Did you say that your group was going to also cover the deplanting of the lots?
That's what our donation was intended to do, is cover all the costs the hard costs the city would incur to deplat.
Okay, this is not in addition to them, this is part of the 40,000. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we want to just make sure the city's not out of pocket.
Okay. You can still come up.
Answer.
So my name is Brad Cabellis. I live at 235 23rd Street. I'm kind of representing the Homeowners Association. I was going to be here if anybody had some questions, but to give you a little bit of oversight, we really didn't poll the residents because the first, we had to do some lawyer fields. And what the lawyers told us initially, I think a couple people can verify it, was you don't really have any business. This is private property transfer in being part of this. So we had some discussions about do we poll people, do we have a meeting, do we get people together, do a count. To do that, we had to make sure we had all our legal ducks in a row. It took several weeks, a couple different lawyers to try to get that all organized. There was no way in time we could, no time frame that we could do that in to be at this meeting. The other part of it is there's that one lawyer's comment that we really don't have any business dealing with private property transfers. So that's probably why you haven't heard a lot from the Homeowners Association out of this. Our Homeowners Association really deals with architectural review, landscape, and considering the maintenance, continuing maintenance of properties around this. So we don't have anything in documents that can say, yeah, you can work with, you know, some HOAs have real strong documents about property ownership. We don't have that in ours. So I don't know if there's any questions. If you were wondering why we don't have a poll with numbers and stuff, we'd have had to come up with a nice formal letter, legal letter, get it approved, get it out, time frames, get people together, do a meeting. Do you do it by email? Do you do it by letter? We just couldn't do anything in that time. Plus, there's that, is it really our responsibility? So.
Thank you. Well, so where I stand on this is, partly coming at it from now a museum background, we have deal with gifts a lot. And donor intent often comes into question when determining how to dispose of a gift. Now, these 12 lots were gifted the city by the developer, Art DeMuro. And so it would appear to me that if Mr. DeMuro had intended them to be either parkland or view corridors or habitat, he would have simply gifted the land unplatted. The fact that he platted the lots tells me he did not intend for them to be used as view corridors or parkland, but rather intended for them to be residential units to generate housing benefit and property tax for the city. So I, without being able to ask him, he's deceased, that's what I gather, but just by the fact that they are platted. And so I view us as the custodians of the economic value of these lots for the entire city, not for the people that live on the street adjoining the pond or even the neighborhood writ large, but for the entire city, for 10,000 residents. And so we have these lots which potentially have an economic value in the form of their property tax revenue they could generate in perpetuity. And in my view, if we don't sell them and allow them to generate that property tax revenue, we are taking that money out of the hands of all the beneficiaries of property tax revenue in the county for the next however many years. That's money from the school district, it's money from the community college, it's money from the city. So I'm really looking at it as, you know, the constituents that I feel I should represent here are the 10,000 residents of Astoria and the greater number of residents of the county who all benefit from county property taxes. And again, we can't know exactly how much property tax revenue these lots will generate. But presuming only a couple of homes are built on each pier, if it's only four homes, they're going to be presumably very nice homes, and they're probably going to generate as much as the average of those other homes, which is about $5,000 or more each. So four homes at $5,000, that's $20,000 a year in property tax revenue. Times 10 years is $200,000. Times 25 years, I think, is $500,000. That's all money that's going to the school system and the community college, and I feel like we're the custodians of that, and I don't feel comfortable. To me, it's never been about the price of the purchase price. It's always been about the potential value of the property tax that comes into the city in the future. So I'm, I think that we ought to sell it at for the purpose it was intended by Mr. DeMuro, which is for residential use.
Okay, I'll stick myself in it. Well, there are compelling arguments on both sides. We all just got our property tax bills, and they've gone up. And that said, I don't see this site, this pond, as benefiting just the Mill Pond development. Ideally, if these 12 sites were not developed, I would like this to become left in its natural state. I mean, that is my preference. I realize we will lose property tax revenue. But again, I see this as a resource now and for the future. I would hope that it would again be something that all community members would feel welcome to use. So I would want to ensure that it is marketed, not marketed, that's the wrong word, but publicized that way. Perhaps have a sign out on Highway 30, just because it is a really special resource. It's the only pond within the community. We do have a gigantic estuary just due north, but this is a different kind of habitat, providing more sheltered environment. I'm not a biologist, so I can't speak more specifically, but from what I do understand, it is a unique resource in our community. And for that reason, I believe it is worth preserving. And I also would hope that the Mill Pond Village Homeowners Association would work closely with Clatsop Soil and Water Development, as well as, there's another organization, Roger, that you probably can tell me the name of, to make sure that if we decide not to sell the property, it is kept and planted with native species to make it more welcoming to wildlife. So that's my preference, is to keep it natural.
I guess I'll speak after Joan. This has been a really challenging decision for me to try to make, because I agree with everything that Bruce has said, as well as everything that Joan has said. And I find it the city's responsibility to be fiscally responsible, not just to the Mill Pond residents, but to all taxpayers in Astoria. And Ms. Story, you mentioned, and I appreciate your willingness to make sure that the city is not in the hole, so to speak, or it's out of pocket for the deplatting expenses, and I definitely appreciate that. But of course, when I crunch the numbers, the city's already, not that this is your fault by any means, but in the hole, $64,000+. And so I think that it's logical to me to, again, when crunching the numbers, to go with what I would consider to be the more competitive offer in this transaction. That said, I am going to advocate to work with the Mill Pond residents and keep that, as Joan said, a green space. I think there's good reasons to side with either, if there are two sides to this. But yeah, I'm leaning towards the Mill Pond residents' offer is where I'm at right now.
Sure, I'll weigh in a little bit here. I came in here, and I think that I'm still in the position that the city needs to sell this property, pretty much for the reasons that the mayor has outlined. You know, we spent a little bit of time, this property's gone up for sale a number of times. We have put it on the market. The market has said it's not interested, and a number of times. And so when Mill Pond residents first came up and they were the only standing offer, I was happy to accept that because it got us out of the property. It got us out of the dues and the fees and the bleeding off of money. So that was until we started talking about how much it was going to cost to replat these properties. And we were going to end up, it was going to cost the city much more than $11,500 that was being offered. So I was a little bit more skeptical about that approach. And then when we had this offer of $35,000, whereas we recoup money, we get out of the dues, it stays up, it actually goes on the tax rolls. I think I'd jump at that. You know, the city has a fiscal responsibility. You know, money's tight, money has been tight. There is no new income in the foreseeable future. So when we take things away, potential ways of money coming in, I think that we're asking for trouble. But I don't want to just focus it on that. The other thing that was true when the Mill Pond homeowners came up with this was because they saw they're looking to protect their views. And then it came along that, well, maybe it's habitat. Well, it is some habitat. We have animals that have moved in, they do that. And I stated this last time we talked about this, that I've lived over a habitat, and I understand that these creatures will still be there for the most part, even if you build over it. It's still water, there's still land, they're going to move around, they're going to move underneath it. So I just don't find that argument very compelling either. I would say if the homeowners wish to purchase the property as opposed to donating, I would be all for that. And if you want to protect your views, and at the same time, feel good about possibly protecting habitat and providing space, I think that would be great. But just to cover the cost to take it off our rolls when we have an opportunity to keep the money coming in to the benefit of the county and to all these entities, I think it's more than worth the minor impact that building over upon in this particular situation. In this particular situation. That's how I feel about it.
Well, you're right. And you're right. I'm not entirely persuaded by the wildlife argument either, I have to say. I've noticed that at least the bird life isn't too discriminating about what still water they use. They settle in the quartz settling ponds. They settle in the sewer farm settling ponds. The difference about this one is that it actually has access to the river, which those two do not. It's more like the Oldbrook Lagoon, which is also used by wildlife. I think it did start out being all about views. And I can understand why you wouldn't want those buildings in front of you. But it was planted that way, and of course you knew it when you bought your house that was part of the plan. I do like the idea of that green space being there, considering the fact that there's quite a bit of other development going on in that area right now. Yeah, even having some extra green space there is attractive. But I'm not sure, as some of my colleagues have pointed out, that it is appropriate for us to short the county and the city on potential income from property taxes. So I've waffled back and forth on this a lot. I appreciate what the homeowners want. I appreciate what Mr. Dulcich has said. And it looks based on what you've said so far that I'm probably the swing vote on this, which is an uncomfortable position to be in. I think I'm gonna have to go along with the sale.
Would someone care to make a motion?
Well, I'm kind of, could we have some clarification with the motion? We're looking to give the staff direction.
That's right. So because we don't have, we had two very different offers on the table tonight. We do not have documents prepared for a sales transaction tonight.
No, actually,
we do.
We have a purchase and sale agreement.
Mr. Morgan, can you come up to the lectern? Make sure I got this down correct.
Sorry.
So we do have a purchase and sales agreement on record for Mr. Dulcich's offer.
He submitted a legal agreement for the $35,000 amount. I'm sorry, I don't have that document with me. I think Jeff might.
It's in the package.
It's in the packet. I don't have the packet in front of me, but it has been submitted. It's been vetted. And I think pretty sure the city attorney has seen it. And I don't know if he wants to review it one more time. I'm not sure you need to. You need to approve that specific document.
Yes, sir.
It's in our electronic.
So what I would say is that if council is wishing to make provide the direction to go forward with the purchase and sales agreement with Mr. Dulcich, that you can make the decision to do that at tonight's meeting, and then authorize the mayor to sign the documents upon final legal review by the city attorney.
Well, then I think, let's see. I would like to make a motion to accept the offer of Mr. Dulcich for the Mill Pond properties. That we've been discussing,
and authorize the mayor to sign the legal documents
and
upon final review by the city attorney.
And authorize the mayor to sign legal documents upon final review.
I move.
Is there a second?
A second.
And this is a no roll call.
No roll call.
All in favor? Aye.
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 All opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
The motion carries by 3-2. Item 6B is Appeal AP 1903 on Design Review Request ER 1903 by MMCG GOI LLC for 21 Woodman Drive concerning the hearing process.
So the City of Astoria has received an appeal for the design review request DR 19-03 concerning the grocery outlet store proposed to be located at 2190 Marine Drive. This has been before the design review committee, and the appeal is of the design review commission's. The appeal is on the design review commission's denial of that permit. So the attorney for Grocery Outlet has asked for verification that the City Council will hold a de novo public hearing on this appeal. So it's the City Council's past practice to hear most appeals de novo, meaning that the Council takes new testimony from the public. The other appeal option is on the record, where limitations are in effect and there can only be re-argument of already made statements made at the Design Review Commission. The council of the past has felt that having de novo hearings allows greater public participation in the decision-making process. Typically, the council has set the hearing type at the night of the appeal. However, in this case, Grocery Outlet would like to have the appeal hearing after the new year to allow time to prepare for this hearing. I want to note a couple things for the city council. When I came to Astoria 12 years ago, the way Astoria determined whether or not to hold on the record or de novo hearings was very different than what I had experienced in prior place of employment. This right here, what we're doing tonight, is more common because it gives all parties an understanding as to what to prepare for in the night of the hearing. And so this would be a typical process when I was at the city of Hillsborough. This is exactly what would happen at every appeal, is that it would be brought forward to the council, and the council would determine the type of appeal to hold. It's just not been our past practice in Astoria, and I think it's probably not been our past practice because it's always been, you know, there's just really kind of been, it is what it is. I would note also that in this case, City Attorney Henningsgaard and also myself are recommending a de novo hearing, particularly at the Design Review Commission level. We had an ex parte contact, which was disclosed after the hearing was closed. And by the council holding and this ex parte contact was made by one of the Design Review Commission members. By holding a de novo hearing, that will cure the ex parte contact made by the Design Review Commission member. If the council chose to hold an on the record hearing, then that is a potentially appealable matter to the Land Use Board of Appeals later on. That could make the city have to go and defend that decision and potentially see a remand back from RUBA to hold a de novo hearing. So therefore, it's recommended by City Attorney Henningsgaard as well as myself that the council, in this case, particularly hold a de novo hearing to cure the ex parte contact which was made during the commission meeting. So tonight, it's recommended that council consider the applicant's and appellant's request for the de novo hearing. They have stated that if a de novo hearing is set, that they would like to have the appeal hearing after the new year to allow for more time to prepare.
Just a quick clarification on this, that even if it is possible, even if we have a de novo hearing, that whatever outcome there is, that it can also be appealed to RUBA.
That's correct.
We're not eliminating that as a factor.
That's correct.
We're just creating a new landscape to.
Yeah, so I mean, sure, there could be appeals up to the Land Use Board of Appeals, but we have this procedural matter, which is original.
And I appreciate that. I just wanted to make sure that was clear to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question about process. I like the idea of a de novo hearing because the public is testifying and so on. But at this hearing, if the applicant provides an application that's substantially different from what they started with, what happens then to the process? Does it have to go back before design review? Do we have to restart from zero on this?
So if it were a de novo hearing, a new or revised site plan could be submitted. I would note that in appeals that were held last year, the Fairfield Inn was a case where a new design was submitted. Additionally, in the co-op appeal, as a part of their appeal process, they were able to submit a revised site plan to address the Mill Pond neighborhood's concerns.
And then it had to go back before
in the case of the co-op, the city council reviewed the revised site plan. In the case of the Fairfield Inn, the council requested it be remanded back to the design review committee. However, the
applicant in that case agreed to extend the 120-day rule to allow that to be remanded back. It was the city attorney's and staff's recommendation that if the applicant didn't extend the 120-day rule, that it not be remanded because it would put us in a vulnerable position. But in that case, the council received the revised design, and then the council then asked the applicant, the Fairfield Inn Hotel applicant, if they would extend the 120-day rule to allow for a remand to go back to the design review committee. In that case, the Fairfield applicant said yes, they would extend the 120-day rule, and then that moved forward.
Yeah, somehow that seems appropriate to me because you know we have a process where a particular plan was presented and there was a decision made in that plan, and if there's a new plan presented, then the same entity is up to get to weigh in on what the new plan is, it seems to me. So,
yeah, I mean, that would have to, and I would say that that in itself would have to be discussed at an appeal hearing.
Okay, thank you.
And that's like, without regard to this specific matter, this particular proposal, just in general, that's a comment I've heard from people just about process in general, is people wonder why if a DRC or an HLC says no, and then the applicant for that particular proposal makes changes that it's thought would meet whatever the problem was, the question is why doesn't it just go right back to the DRC or HLC? And is that a matter of just city policy or is that a matter of state policy?
So in this case, the design review committee made a decision. The applicant appealed that decision to the city council. That's their next step or process. I would note that our city code also states that once a decision has been made at a lower body, they cannot reapply for a period of 6 months. So their other choice would have been to not appeal and then wait 6 months to file a new application.
Can you speak to, because I've had questions about the timeline as well, why it is beneficial to visit this after the new year, like how that falls within?
Yeah, I can't speak to it in terms of the appellant themselves. However, I would note that the city attorney Hemingsgaard and I had a discussion about this because this question was raised about could council mandate that the hearing be held in December rather than in January. You know, per the conversation with Mr. Hemingsgaard, if the city held the appeal hearing in December, by state law and by city code, the appellant could ask for a continuance, and it has to be granted. It cannot, and this actually happened at the design review commission level, where there was a continuance which was requested. And some in the audience had opposed the commission granting the continuance, and Mr. Hemingsgaard stated, no, it must be granted per city code and also state law. So in the case, what we would have is a situation where this could go out till January anyway, with more process in the meantime.
So when is the initial 120 days up?
The initial 120-day rule expires around January 20th.
Okay. That's the initial one. And so we're going to get another 120 days.
They have stated they would extend it, looks like maybe another 60 days.
Another 60 days beyond this January.
Yes.
So if, again, I can go back to the Fairfield Inn situation where, you know, they walk in here with a completely new design, something that really we felt needed to be looked at by design committee to make sure that it meets all the requirements. And if in January the grocery outlet brings a completely new design too, I feel we're back in the same situation. I just would like to make sure that there is adequate time for us to address that.
So that would have to be discussed at that point in time?
Yeah.
We can't presuppose.
Yeah, we can't presuppose any of that. So I think that's the caution.
I would note that if, you know, in the case of it comes before the council in January with the new design, and the applicant is not willing to extend the 120-day rule to have enough time to send it back to the Design Review Commission and include a subsequent round of appeals, it would not be staff's recommendation to do so, because we do not want to be in a situation whereby the 120-day rule expires and there isn't a final decision made by the city.
Okay, well, but that's, I mean, that's really, those nuances really are more apropos for the,
you know, for a hearing to discuss those types of matters.
This is a tricky discussion, a little bit, and so I don't want to presuppose anything, but just again for clarification, if we chose to do on the record, we would schedule an appeal sometime between now and January to take that on.
Yeah, if we did an if council set an on the record hearing, we'd be looking at the second meeting in December, which would be December the 16th.
Okay.
And again, the reason why that's on the record is not recommended.
The reason why it is not recommended by the city manager nor city attorney Henningsgaard is we have a procedural matter that came up at the Design Review Commission where a member of the Design Review Commission revealed an ex parte contact during final deliberations. And it's recommended to hold a de novo hearing as the de novo hearing would cure that ex parte contact made by that Design Review Commission member.
Well,
I just
think it's too bad that that happened at Design Review, and I'd let that be a warning to all our committees and the council in the future going forward that how important declaring ex parte contacts is, and if there are any going forward with these procedures, because I feel now I'm kind of not given the choice. So, but I will vote in favor of extending the de novo in this particular instance.
Yeah, and I express my appreciation in his absence to Mr. Henningsgaard and Mr. Estes for their regular cautions to us to keep us out of legal trouble. And there had been training provided to this particular member, so it's unfortunate that incident happened. I do feel that the legal argument and Mr. Estes' argument are compelling arguments to not have an on-the-record hearing. Completely aside from that, I still would be in favor of a de novo hearing for the reason that that's what we always do. I mean, it's about transparency. It's about ensuring adequate public input. The only time I'm aware we've ever done an on-the-record hearing in my 3 years on council was in the final Fairfield Inn meeting after we had already had city council meetings and other commission meetings that allow hours and hours of public input. And at the final meeting, it was no longer felt necessary to have the same input heard again. We had heard it all. But in this case, the city council hasn't heard this matter, and I think it would be inappropriate to have an on-the-record hearing and not allow full public input and comment. Additionally, just as to the matter of procedurally how we will make a decision on which type of hearing to hold tonight, I made the determination, as Mr. Estes mentioned, and as is written in the agenda or the packet that was published online, I made a determination earlier not to allow public comment as to whether or not we hear this on the record or de novo, and did that for a number of reasons centered around avoiding the substantial number of ex parte contacts that people are already attempting with members of the council, and the council's noting any contact to Mr. Estes to be sure it's documented. There are people who have asked, come to the podium tonight to ask to speak, and I've seen hands raised, and I completely sympathize with people's interest in making comment. However, it would not be appropriate to allow any comment on this matter when it's been published that there won't be comment, and there may be other parties who are not present to make comment. And additionally, you have gotten, I think, you have gotten the input that you have kept from showing us so that we don't have ex parte contact. So I stand by my decision to not have public comment on the matter of determination of what type of hearing to hold, and I do recommend we make it a de novo hearing.
I support that as well.
I'd like to make a motion. I'd like to move that the City Council approve the request to have a notable hearing on the matter of the appeal on the design review of AP 19-03. On design review request, DR 19-03 by MMCG GOI LLC for the 2190 Marine Drive hearing. That should cover it. It's a lot.
No. Okay. Your recommendation is it be a de novo hearing?
Yes.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the next item is item 6C.
What about when the hearing is going to be? You guys get to decide that too, right?
The hearing would be determined once we receive a 120-day extension request, and we'll be able to get that figured out, and public notice will be provided.
Amendments to grant agreement between State of Oregon and City of Astoria, and sub-grant agreement between City of Astoria and Blue Jump Seat LLC for the cleanup of the former Astoria warehousing site.
At the September 30th council meeting, council approved a grant agreement between the state and the city, as well as a sub-grant agreement between the city and Blue Jump Suit LLC, who is representing Fort George Brewery to provide cleanup funds for the former Astoria warehousing site. Fort George Brewery was in the process of acquiring that property. It was noted at the September 30th meeting that a modification may be required following completion of the real estate transaction, and that was the case. Tonight, City Council is asked to approve amended grant agreements between the State of Oregon and the city, as well as the sub-grant agreement between the city and Blue Jump Suit. So those have been provided before you, and some of the amendments required are noted in the memo. We do have representatives from Blue Jump Suit, a la Fort George, as well as Business Oregon in the back of the room. If there are any specific questions, and tonight it's recommended that council approve the amended grant agreement between the state and the city, as well as the sub-grant agreement between the city and Blue Jump Suit.
In the interest of transparency, I will mention that I did receive an in-kind donation on my campaign last fall from Jack Harris, who is one of the owners of Fort George, which is buying the warehousing property. So, but I do not believe that will prejudice my decision on this matter.
Thank you. So we're going to need two motions when council is prepared, one for the agreement with the state and then the amended sub-agreement between the city and the regions.
I move that we approve the amendment to the grant agreement between the State of Oregon and the City of Astoria.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And on the second amendment?
I move that we approve the sub-grant agreement between the City of Astoria and Blue Jumpsuit LLC for the cleanup of the former Astoria warehousing site.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Ms. Olson, thank you for making the trip out today.
You're welcome.
But you can still come up and make comment if you want, even though you've decided.
That's fine. Thank you.
thank you for all your work on this.
So I would note, just while we have folks from Fort George here and Ms. Olson, and because I've been receiving some questions from counselors, and I've just take the question, and Councilor Rock, I actually mentioned this a little bit earlier. You know, following up from the Enterprise Zone work session, which was held a little bit ago, there's some question as to when any sort of agreement could come back to the city of Astoria. At this point in time, both Business Oregon and Cedar are working to prepare the documents. Those have to be put together and have to be coordinated, and then they'll be brought back to the cities of Warrenton and Astoria, the Port of Astoria Commission and Clatsop County. We're gonna probably try to have Astoria to go first. That's kind of procedurally what would happen, since the location is in the city of Astoria. I don't know if it's gonna be ready to come to your next regular meeting. It may be in December, but stay tuned, more to come on that. But I'm guessing within, before the end of the year, we're going to want to be able to have that finalized.
Well, I know we're all very pleased that this is moving forward, and look forward to keeping the paperwork flowing and getting it going. Thank you. So we have four more items. Is anyone on the council feeling in need of a break or a press through? All right, item 60, request to trim trees on city property.
Peter Teddy, who resides at 500 West Lexington, has submitted an application for permission to trim trees on city property. The city owned property is to the northwest of Mr. Teddy's. Mr. Teddy has obtained all the adjacent property owner's signatures saying they concur with the request. The subject trees are primarily big leaf maples and appear to be trimmed in the past. Based on the information provided by the applicant and a site visit, it's recommended the request to trim trees on city property be approved with the inclusion of the two conditions noted in the memo. I would note that typically tree cutting permits are set up to expire at the end of a calendar year. And Mr. Teddy doesn't expect to do this until after the beginning of the new year. So it's recommended that council approve the permit and approve it be valid for 6 months from today's date. This will allow him to be able to get his tree cutting contractor out there after the beginning of the year.
Big leaf maples are kind of like big weeds. They grow pretty fast and spread out a lot. I think 25% is a reasonable amount to cut if his neighbors don't object.
Yeah, I took a look at this. It seems perfectly reasonable, and if staff recommends it as well, I don't have any issues with it.
Yeah, I drove by the property this afternoon, and it's definitely clear that they've been trimmed before.
All right, well, a motion, please.
I move that we approve the request to trim trees on city property adjacent to Peter today.
And allow the permit to be to be valid from 6 months from today's date.
And to be valid for 6 months from today's date.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Item 6E is authorized geotechnical investigation services with Cornforth Consultants.
So in early March, the city was notified by the property owner at 1829 Irving of slumping material under the Irving Street Bridge at 19th Street. Staff performed a site visit and found material had moved at the edge of the yard. In addition, cracks had formed at the base of the fill material underneath the bridge. Since that time, city staff have been monitoring the area and no further movement has been observed. Cornforth Consultants provides geotechnical services for the city for many years, and they performed a site visit in May to provide an initial assessment. Following their site visit, Cornforth made recommendations to the site as to noted modifications. These were noted on the first memo on items that should be done to address this in the short term. The next recommended step is to perform a geotechnical investigation to determine the type and cause of movement so that more permanent solutions can be developed. Cornforth provided a scope and a fee to perform the exploration and to install inclinometers, or an inclinometer, in the land movement area. This has been quoted in the amount of $59,500. The work would be partially paid by the capital improvement fund slide repair and maintenance line, as well as by the public works improvement fund. It's recommended tonight that council approve the contract for geotechnical investigation services at Irving Avenue and 19th Street with Cornforth Consultants in the not-to-exceed amount of $59,500. I am going to ask that Cindy Moore from our Public Works Department provide a little bit more detail on this item.
I was intrigued by the line, so that a more permanent solution can be developed. And I wonder, as part of your brief, if you can let us know what might be the range of more, what would more permanent solutions look like?
Happy to do that. So, we have a few pictures because I think that description leaves a lot to the imagination. So I'm going to go over here and point 10. This is the newly constructed Irving Bridge shortly after it was finished. So this way is north. The area that we're talking about, this is the home, the property owner, and there's a tenant in there that reported seeing some sloughing in this area behind the vegetation on their grassy hillside, which we'll show a picture of. And then the underneath is directly underneath the bridge, and we also have a picture of that. So this is what they're seeing, and now we're looking east, now we're looking west at the house. They have a nice grassy yard up here. This line, just to note, we have a small piece of city property, so what's moved right here is estimated to be on city property, but this is what they observed at the top of the hill behind that brush. And then the next picture shows underneath the bridge, when we were looking around after they reported that movement, what we're seeing underneath the bridge, this is the slope that was left, and there was some cracking here and a little bit of sloughing over here of material. So that's what we were referring to in the memo. And then the next picture shows what it looks like today with the plastic over it that was recommended by Cornforth as a temporary solution to keep the water off. Water is not a friend to landslide, so we wanted to keep that up. And then our crews went in and just reshaped it to get rid of that crack. So that's more detail about, or give you more visual of what we're dealing with. As far as more permanent solutions, this is, as it says in the memo, we know that this is a complex slide area with multiple slides converging. So we want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence before we go ahead with any sort of remedies, which there's a whole slew of different things we can do. As you can see, that's a pretty steep slope. But we can't just go in and put a whole bunch of rock there, because that would put weight kind of mid-slope on the larger landslide area, or known historic landslide area. So we're going to be looking for direction once we determine if it's what it looks like, hopefully just surface, then we can approach it one way. If it's a deeper issue, then there's going to be other considerations. And Jeff, our Public Works Director, Jeff
Harrington,
do you have anything to add?
Sound good. I've got a question. Is there any risk to the bridge?
That's a great question. We have not observed any movement of the bridge. It looks like it's, like we suspect, pretty shallow and right underneath the bridge, so we haven't seen any indication that the bridge has moved or there's any cracks.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, it makes sense to me. We have a lot of slippery slopes around here, and especially stay ahead of the curve on this. So,
well, I'll move that we approve the contract for geotechnical investigation services at Irving Avenue and 19th with Cornforth Consultants, not to exceed $59,500.
I'll second that. Since I live right down the street.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Item 6F is the resolution to transfer appropriations within fiscal year 2019-20 budget for an Emergency Communications Fund Number 132.
So this item and then the next agenda item are associated with one another. Oregon Revised Statutes provides guidance for the transfer of general operating contingency operations that aggregate during the fiscal year and that are less than 15% of the total funds, and these can be authorized by resolution. At the time the Emergency Communications Fund budget was prepared, the amounts reserved for future capital expenditures and part of the ending fund balance included amounts to purchase new dispatch consoles in our 911 center. Emergency communication staff have been able to research and obtain quotes for the new desk dispatch consoles, and there's an immediate need to move forward this fiscal year. With this immediate need, transfer in the amount of $85,000 from the contingency to capital outlay is required to fund this project. So tonight it's recommended that City Council consider the resolution to approve the transfer of $85,000 from the Emergency Communication Fund Number 132's contingency to capital outlay. And our Finance Director, Susan Brooks, can answer any specific questions about the procedural matters on this budget resolution.
Well, I'm just curious, in the report we received, it was mentioned that there have been some ergonomic injuries due to the other equipment. I'm curious how old it is.
Half of it's approaching 20 years, the other half's approaching 10 years.
Okay, thank you.
At the time, the 20-year stuff really didn't take ergonomics into consideration. When we added the two additional, we matched it as best we could, so it was still the same configuration, not the newer type of consoles.
And for the record, that was Jeff Rzecki of the 911 Emergency Communications Center.
Thank you.
Well, I'll give you a motion, and if there's no further comment.
I move that we approve the resolution to transfer appropriations for Emergency Communications Fund 132.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
You'll need a resolution there. Or it's a resolution, you need a roll call.
Roger that. Okay, Mr. Harrington.
Councilor Herman?
Aye.
Councilor Brownson?
Aye.
Councilor West?
Aye.
Councilor Rockwell?
Aye.
Aye. Finally, 6G, dispatch console.
So this is the associated matter whereby $85,000 is requested to be expended for the purchase and installation of these new consoles. There was a quote which was received in the amount of $70,640.75 using the cooperative contract with a cooperative procurement program, which is allowed by purchasing code and state statutes. And then the remainder of the funds is the requested is the amount which is needed to do the installation. So it's recommended that council approve the expenditure of $85,000 for the purchase of the new dispatch console furniture and associated installation costs.
Well, I'd like to move that the city council approve the expenditure of $85,000 for the purchase of the new dispatch console furniture.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Is there any new business from council? Are there any public comments?
Can I, real quick?
Yes.
New business. Mayor, you mentioned the recruiter for the community development director coming to town, and I wanted to provide a bit of an update on that matter to the council. So what we've had is we have hired Peckham and McKinney, and Bobby Peckham came and had a site visit here in Astoria and met with city staff as well as some of the chairs of our various boards and commissions, met with the mayor, really to just kind of talk and get a feel for the town. Ms. Peckham actually ended up spending some time here in town to be able to get to know the area a little bit more. And what we're going to be looking at is issuing this recruitment here. I'm guessing within the month. There's some timing because of the holidays, and we want to be able to not have the recruitment end in that time around Christmas, New Year's, that kind of area, because the depth of recruitments will be lessened. So we're probably going to be extending that until the beginning of the new year into January. We don't have the exact time frame yet, but just wanted to be able to provide some additional information that that we're putting together the materials and that should be going out here in the next few weeks with it continuing into the new year. So that's the kind of the time frame we've got at this point.
Great, thank you.
And I'd like to say third time's a charm. Is this third time?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. In the year.
And just for my colleagues, I just want to say on the Mill Pond issue was, it's a tough one. There's a lot of passion involved there. And I just want to thank all my colleagues for the sincerity and passion with which they pursued this topic, regardless of how we voted. I know everybody is trying to do the right thing. So thank you. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.